Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. Today is Mentor Monday, and we have one quick reminder from your Dog Show Superintendents Association. Get your entries in early. It's a win-win. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. This is your host, Laura Reeves, and today I am very excited to be joined by Eileen Hackett, sort of a legend in the world of sporting dogs and professional handling and English setters. And so, Eileen, tell us a little bit about when you started in dogs. Give us the 411 here.
I started with a little mutt in obedience in 4-H.
Yes.
And went from there to getting a golden retriever and did obedience with a golden retriever. Then did a lot of field work with the golden retrievers and then ended up with an English setter.
And what year was this? What era are we talking
about? And I guess I was still in juniors, so it must have been 40 years ago. A while ago.
And so English setters have kind of been what you're known for, I think.
Yes.
Yes. Successful.
Very successful. Yeah.
And talk to us about what's important when you're breeding an English setter. Just kind of the overall picture that you're trying to make when you think of your vision of the breed.
I think the overall outline is the most important part. That they don't look like a Gordon setter, real heavy and clunky, or like an Irish setter, a little more racy and athletic. I look for something that's athletic, something that could do the job they were bred to do.
Right. And you still do some field work with your dogs, yeah?
I don't personally, but the fellow that I breed English setters with is very active in the field, yes.
And that's outstanding in a breed that we have seen kind of a division between the field type and the shit, right?
There's always been a division.
Back to the Laverick and the Llewellyn.
Exactly. I think a lot of the English setters today could compete in the field. They just haven't been given the chance, the opportunity.
Right.
You know, I think that they would be capable, a lot of them.
Very good. And so what brought you from doing obedience and field work with your Goldens to English setters to being a very successful professional handler?
I never stopped showing dogs all along. And I fell in love with the English setter breed. I taught for 8 years and decided that teaching was not my passion.
You taught school?
I taught so I could afford to show dogs. And a lot of people were asking me to show their dogs, so I did. Yeah. But I kind of made it a rule that I would only show my own English setters because I could be a whore in other breeds, but not my own.
Yes.
Oh, that's kind of the way I felt about it.
Yes, I understand that well. And so who did you sort of mentor with, if you will, if you could go back to your mentors in handling and in English setters?
I worked for a professional handler in Vermont as a kid. Her name was Martha Thorne. And then Parker Harris, who had hounds. I worked for him for a little bit. And Bill Trainer was out there in the East Coast as well, so they were all mentors. And in English setter breed, Neil Weinstein was probably my biggest mentor, and Ray Chase on the East Coast, and I met Ray Chase through Neil. So
sure. Okay. Yeah. And now you're based out of Indianapolis area. Very good. And so talk to me a little bit about what you run into with the problems that you see coming up between owner handlers and professional handlers. Talk to me about that conflict and give us some of the history. We were talking a little bit earlier about this isn't a new problem.
No, it is. I don't think it is a new problem. Wendell Sammet gave me a bunch of old Dogs in Review and old gazettes from the 30s, 40s, 50s. And of course, I'm pouring through them and I come across a lot of articles that are timely to today saying, oh, the judges are crooked and there's not cheap champions and too many shows, the same old. It was a 1946 article.
Wow.
So I don't think it's new, especially the professional versus the amateur divide. And I think that there's a problem with the owner-handler competitive series now, in that it's difficult, especially for kids that are working for professionals or traveling with professionals, not even getting paid.
And trying to learn.
Trying to learn and not being able to show in the owner-handler series because they're associated with a professional. And I think that's kind of tragic, because when they get out of juniors, instead of jumping in and being a handler, which they're allowed to do, they could travel with a handler and compete in the owner-handler series successfully and go forward instead of jumping into the profession.
Give me your thoughts on this. Do you think that the owner-handler series has a tendency to be more dividing than we might want it to be?
I do. In many cases, I think it is dividing. I think it's the professionals are going to always win the breed, and so all we can strive for is the owner-handler.
That it sets up breed. That mentality.
And I think that's wrong. I think that's wrong for judges to feel that way, and I think it's wrong for the owner-handlers to feel that way. You know, they should be trying to compete against us, and actually I think in many cases they have an advantage over us in that they are showing one dog and being able to condition one dog, and surely they have a job as well, and that takes up time and effort, but they should have a better bond with their dog than we are able to with a string of dogs.
You would think that that would be the goal, and I personally have preached that for years, and I know you as a professional handler, and many of us as professional handlers, have encouraged owner handlers and said, listen, here's what you can do.
Here's the deal.
You can do this better than I can do this.
Right. At the English Setter National one year, we set up a kind of a booth, and that we are not the enemy, that the professionals are not the enemy, that we're willing to help you out. And a different professional was available in the grooming room for questions or whatever for an hour, and we had pretty good attendance and success with that. But there were a lot of people that I think felt, oh no, they're going to sabotage my dog, which was totally ridiculous, but that was in many cases the feeling.
Right. And I think that's just devastating that people, instead of looking to professionals, to judges, to longtime breeders as mentors, they're looking at them as a threat.
Exactly.
And that's disappointing.
Exactly. Very disappointing. Right. Very disappointing.
And so, speaking of national specialties, we love national specialties. Why do we love national specialties? Tell us your thought on why you love national specialties.
Of course, you always go wanting to win. You know, that certainly is one reason to go. I would go to my English Setter National no matter who is judging and have, because that's my vacation. That's where I get to mingle with other breeders and see what they've got new and exciting coming up, and they get to see what I've got. And the winning is a bonus, of course, but the goal, at least for me, is to see what else is there, what's coming up, and who's got what. Maybe there'll be an exciting stud dog.
Something
someplace.
Exciting.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's fun. For me, it's fun. You know, the English Setter people are wonderful competitors, in that I can sit ringside with you, and I don't have to like your dog, you don't have to like my dog, but I can be happy if your dog won because I like you. And that's kind of a fun thing for me, coming from other breeds like Goldens or Irish Setters, where it's not quite as congenial at Nationals.
Yes, that can be a problem. And I think that you kind of hit on something that is true not just for owner-handlers and exhibitors that get the opportunity to educate their eye and see a lot of different styles of dogs, but judges also.
Right. That is true. We've got a good judges education within the English Setter Club, and they've got a great juniors program. They spend a lot of time with their juniors. They have always one evening just for the juniors and junior projects and that kind of thing, and they'll give the juniors a questionnaire that they have to go and answer and seek out certain breeders and know that they've talked to them, and they'll sign off. And
oh, I love
that. Which is real fun.
What a great program.
It was kind of like a treasure hunt, but treasure hunt for people more than anything, because I remember as a kid going to the National and thinking, oh my God, I can't possibly approach that person. You know, they're like gods. And Ray Chase sat me at the table one time, and I was dumbfounded just sitting there listening to everybody. But it was one of the best memories I have as a kid at a National. So the English Setter Club has been real forward thinking in, I think, keeping their juniors involved. We've got a lot of English Setter breeders now that were juniors.
And I think that's amazing. And I think it's important that we remember that junior handlers don't always turn into professional handlers.
No,
they turn into breeders.
Breeders, that's right. That's right. Or owners, you know. And I personally don't like to sell my dogs as show dogs. I want them to go wherever they're going to go for the rest of their lives. Yeah. And if they're shown, that's great. That's just me. You know, I'm just as excited to have a dog be a therapy dog as I am for a dog to be an obedience dog or a show dog.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I think that that's another reason for people who aren't necessarily going to win. You know, I hear all the time, well, I'm not going to win. Well, you're not there to win.
Well, I think that you shouldn't go with that attitude. I mean, I think you should go with a, yeah, I've got the best dog on the end of the leash. Because if you don't believe in it, you shouldn't be showing it. On the one hand. On the other hand, it's one person's opinion. And if you still believe you've got the best dog when you go home, then you should be happy with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you get the bonus opportunity of seeing and
that
learning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that a national is the best place for learning.
Yeah. How many do you guys get at your national? What's your entry look like these
200-ish
days?
200-ish.
Yeah. I mean, where else are you going to see 200 English setters?
No.
You're
exactly.
Just not.
You're not. No, you're not.
And you get to see the full breadth of the breed from different styles of dogs.
Exactly.
And it helps you learn more what is interesting to you in a breeding program or what have you.
Exactly.
Excellent. And so give us the Eileen's best tip for going forward for the owner-handler with an English setter, or any sporting dog, I guess. But specifically, what's your best suggestion to the owner-handler, whether it's a grooming thing or a training thing?
I would follow around whoever you think's got the best dogs in your mind. And I just follow them around.
Stalk them.
Exactly. Stalk them. I mean, I did as a kid, and I think that's the thing to do, you know, and pore over the history books. I mean, I don't know how, as a breeder, you can go forward if you don't know from whence you came. And so I would pore over the history books, you know, talk to the people that actually saw those dogs that are in your pedigree and know your pedigree. I mean, you, in my mind, have no right breeding if you don't know intimately at least three generations behind what you're trying to breed.
Right. And once again, did I mention national specialties?
There you go.
Where you're going to find those people and you're
going to
find those dogs.
Exactly. And I don't think you have to necessarily stick with just English setter people. I mean, I love talking to any breeder. You know, how do you like to breed? You know, are you successful line breeding? Have you ever done this? You know, how do you choose your puppies? How do you leash break your puppies? That kind of thing. You know, I think with English setters, they're so soft. I don't really expect a lot of my puppies. And I tell people, when I show my puppies, if they wag their tail when they come out of the ring, I am a happy girl. And anything else is great. And I've been accused of not training my puppies. Well, when they're 2 and 3 years old, as specials, they still have an attitude.
Right, and they still enjoy it.
And they still enjoy it, yeah, which I think is real important.
Absolutely. So in your breeder stalking, I'd be curious to know, not just you're looking at breeders in different breeds, but are you looking at different or talking to different breeders within your breed?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right, so you've got difference of opinion. You've got from over here and from over here.
Yes.
And do you find that you learn something different from each
from
one of those people?
Oh, I think you can take something home from everybody you talk to.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Without a doubt.
And, okay, so how do you leash break your puppies?
How do I leash break my puppies?
Very soft, sweet, English setter.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Usually a lot of food and a Bresco. I don't like to put a chain on a puppy or jerk a puppy around. I'm a big proponent of halties, and I know that a lot of people are not.
Wow, interesting.
But I have found with the English, they like to gag and retch a lot. And with a haltie, there's none of that. And they can still get the food, and you can get their heads up and wean them off it pretty easily. I used to think it was some obedience gimmick, and then found out it wasn't so.
Well, now, see, I've learned something new today myself. I would never have dreamed of that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. And when you grade your litter, what's your star? What's your standout in your mind? What are you looking for in that puppy?
Balance, I think, is the first thing I look for, overall balance. The English setter standard tells us that no one part should be taken greater than the whole. So I like to look at the whole. I don't put them on the table and rack them up in a stack and go over all the parts and pieces. That I like to take them for a walk and see how they go, sit and watch them play and that kind of thing. I have small litters anyway, thankfully, but I'll usually keep two or three and grow them out until the bites come in right and the testicles come down for sure and right. That kind of thing. Right. But I think overall balance is the first thing I'm looking for.
And do you find in the English setters, I have owned some, but what I found is because they're so soft and so sweet, do you find that it's hard to pick out the one that's going to have the show dog attitude, or do you see it?
I made a big mistake. I had two litter brothers, and they're both real good dogs. And one was better structurally in every respect, and he did not have a great attitude. The other one fell short just about everywhere, but he thought he was the greatest one in the world. And I kept the better dog because as a breeder, I thought I could go forward with this dog more easily. And it was such a struggle to show him. He finished easily. He was winner's dog at the National. But as a special, he just didn't love it. So he never made it as a special. His litter brother thought he was the cat's ass and walked through with a novice person showing him, which was wonderful for them, but probably would have made a great special. But he would have been a fooler special. He wouldn't have been a right. to die for special.
Right. Right.
It wouldn't be a breeder's special. It would have been a fooler special.
Interesting. Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. For sure. Okay, well, Eileen, thank you so very much for joining us here at this adorable little dog show in Paducah, Kentucky.
I'm glad you drove all the way out here.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Eileen.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Bye.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.